and all Radio Aryan listeners, a happy Christmas and a diversity-free New Year.
You're listening to The Daily Traditionalist with Matthew Heimbach at RadioAryan.com.
Hello, comrades. This is your host of The Daily Traditionalist, Matthew Heimbach, and joining me today is a very special guest. I want to do a little bit of an intro. I'm being joined today by Mr. Billy Roper. And, you know, one of the most interesting things is in this movement, you know, the dedication that it takes to keep fighting, not just day after day, but year after year, is something that needs to be given the highest praise. Because as we know, white nationalism, it is definitely not good for your pocketbook. It is not good for your stress levels. It is not good for a lot of different things, but it is correct. It is the right thing to do to fight for the fact that our children have a right to exist, have a right to be free. And Billy Roper has been fighting for our people like literally since I was in like middle school or probably longer, you know, being involved, organizing with the National Alliance, back in the day, and doing a tremendous job growing that organization by leaps and bounds. Of course, under Dr. Pierce, and he's continued working. And Mr. Roper and I have a lot in common, especially when it comes to, both of us are Christians. And of course, understanding Balkanization. And Mr. Roper, I want to be able to mention his books that he's written as well, talking about Balkanization, how our people need our own independent nation. We need to be sovereign. And he's joining me today to talk about some of the things that are going on both in the world and here at home. So without further ado, Mr. Billy Roper, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Matt. Thank you for having me on the program, and thank you for the very generous and gracious introduction.
Well, it's a real pleasure to have you here. Now, let's start a little bit away from home, something that, of course, it's been interesting for white nationalists to understand in the sort of Trump era, right? You know, nationalism is increasingly normal. The majority of white folks polled feel that discrimination against whites is as bad or worse than what other communities are facing. We've got 10% of whites that when asked by a pollster, which of course we know when it comes to racial issues, whether it's affirmative action or things like that, or the Donald Trump election, most white folks are uncomfortable with responding to pollsters about how they really feel. And close to 10% of people responded that they, are sympathetic with national socialist ideals and things like that. So, I mean, there is this huge growth of white racial consciousness that's moving forward. And I think Donald Trump really tapped into that, but he's not one of us. And, how I bring that up is it looks like the United States is officially going to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. So this is going to be moving the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. This is going to lead to a whole lot of destabilization in the Middle East. And of course, this is something the Zionists have been wanting for literally generations at this point. This is part of their Greater Israel plan. And I know you are very well versed in Middle Eastern politics and how it relates to us. So I wanted to get your initial thoughts on kind of what this means and how we should view it as white nationalists here in the United States.
Well, I think it's interesting. You and I both understand that we're not going to be able to vote our way out of this situation necessarily, but Ann Coulter responded to Mr. Trump's decision by tweeting that, well, now who does not want to see Trump impeached? Basically, the left who are anti-Israeli and the right who are anti-Jewish are united on the fact that if we don't have a wall, her point was, if we do not have a wall, then we'd be better off with President Pence. But that's really kind of a civic nationalist response. My response would be that he may be trying to buy some wiggle room, trying to buy some time so that he could enact some of his domestic policy agendas if he thinks that he can get the Jews off of his back by placating them and moving forward to having Jerusalem recognized as the capital of Israel. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Greater Israel from the Euphrates to the Nile and not just the Golan Heights, but I guess they could be neighbors of the Kurds eventually, is not something that the rest of the Middle East is going to be comfortable with, especially Turkey, which has U.S. bases and German and U.S. tactical nuclear weapons there. So it's going to destabilize the entire region. I wrote an article a couple days ago for my website and blog, The Roper Report, where I talked about the problem of Jewish assimilation, that outside of Israel, over half of Jews marry non-Jews, and outside of the Orthodox communities, it's 71%. But I think that a lot of Jews are going to be making aliyah from the United States and from Europe back to Israel, especially if Israel itself begins to expand its geographic boundaries. And in the long run, as far as the Balkanization idea, that could be good for us.
Well, exactly, because we need to be able to have our own space. We need to be able to have our own nation. And of course, they are not part of our nation, right? There's no such thing as an ethnostate where we would have Jews in it. And, the biggest thing that it seems to me is this is just priming us for another conflict, because, of course, we see the escalation of conflict in the Middle East. And we, of course, our sons, so many of my comrades, I know yours, are veterans, or a lot are still active duty military. And this is a provocation of the Islamic world, especially the Arab countries like Syria, or in Lebanon, that are actually on our side, that understand Zionism, that are opposed to Zionism. They're opposed to Jewish imperialism. And, we continually end up getting our sons and now daughters. I mean, the ridiculousness of the United States is, now pushing for women to be in combat and all these sorts of roles, getting our sons and daughters butchered in a potential conflict in another Arab country. I mean, the warmongering against Iran, of course, and the drums of war, of course, are beating on the Korean Peninsula. I don't think Mr. Trump understands that you can't get the Jews off your back. When they sense weakness, then if you're going to give them an inch, they are going to take a mile. And this is exactly how they have always acted. They are very, very vicious when it comes to a sensing weakness. And I don't think he fully understands. I mean, maybe he's totally in on it. I mean, it's really hard to tell. I actually kind of want your thought on that. Do you think he's naive on the Jewish question, that he thinks he can negotiate with these people? He's a deal maker, right? He thinks he can make a deal. Or do you think he's really just kind of, the swamp has just kind of swallowed him up at this point?
I think that he probably is a charlatan and a showman and not really politically savvy. He probably thinks that he could make a deal, but he doesn't understand that there are some people who are not motivated by money. And even though we stereotype Jews as being motivated by money, when it comes to their ethnicity, they always value their group solidarity higher than even financial profit. So I think that he's making a lot of major errors. For example, 2 days ago, Israel actually attacked an Iranian base in Syria. And the idea is that they want to take the Golan Heights when Syria Balkanizes, if they can maneuver that. But ISIS, which was created by the U.S. and by Israel, has been pretty well thoroughly destroyed in Syria by the Iranians. And you have this, centuries-old conflict within Islam between Sunni and Shi'i, with the major Sunni power now being Saudi Arabia, which is our ally and the recipient of the second highest level of U.S. aid after Israel. We pay them that so they'll be friends with the Jews. And then the other side, the Shia being led by Iran. So we are taking the Sunni side, the Saudi Arabian side, as they ally with Israel against the Shia side led by Iran. And as you said, that is a recipe for disaster because, of course, Russia is allied not only with Assad in Syria, but also with Iran against the ISIS remnants there. And with what's going on with Kim on the North Korean side, alienating our allies by recognizing Jerusalem as the capital. It ultimately, I try not to engage in hyperbole too much, but it could very well be a powder keg in the Middle East that could lead to a nuclear war.
Which, of course, is the last thing that anyone wants. I mean, the idea of conflict at this point, with the American military having spent over $2 trillion over the past generation in these Middle Eastern conflicts, thousands of American lives lost, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of Arab lives lost for no reason other than the interests of Israel. I mean, the reason we went into to Iraq, I mean, everyone knows this. This is, accepted fact at this point. It shows how, really bold the chutzpah of the Zionists and their various lackeys, that we invaded Iraq not because Saddam Hussein was going to march down Pennsylvania Avenue, but because he was a threat to Israel. I mean, the same reason with Assad. You know, Assad is a Western educated, very moderate sort of guy. He fights radical Islamic extremism, has a very high standard of living for his people, promotes education, and really is just a good leader and wants to be able to have peaceful relations with his neighbors. But the Zionists don't want that. They need conflict. They thrive off of conflict because they can pit different sides against one another. And of course, we're still dealing with the conflicts that are going on in places like Yemen and elsewhere. And this is all for the interests of global Jewry, because you're right. I mean, when you said that they're not just motivated by money, that is true. I mean, the one thing that'll get a so-called right-wing Jew and a left-wing Jew in total agreement is whatever is best for their tribe, that even if it is not profitable. I mean, you just look at the psychological and moral weapons they use against our people, such as the pornography industry. You know, they give away pornography essentially for free. You know, when they went into Gaza, they actually began broadcasting pornography on the television stations there. I mean, why do they give that away for free, right? If they're all about profit, it's because they're trying to undermine their host nations, undermine their enemies, break apart the family, and destroy morality. And this is a continual process that we've seen going on, not just for decades or generations, but for centuries. They do the same thing every single time. They use the exact same playbook, and we need to be able to be smart enough and be able to work with international allies to avoid falling into their pitfalls and their traps, and be able to handle this situation once and for all, so that our people and all Europeans, and hopefully all peoples, can eventually be free. Now, going into that, actually, you know, the push of nationalism. You have been involved, of course, in nationalism for a long time, and this wasn't part of what we talked about before the show, but I kind of want to know your thoughts as to where you view the movement now. I mean, you've got a tremendous amount of experience with seeing, you know, the growth of the movement. I mean, being able to be there, you know, with Dr. Pierce and others, to be able to see, you know, the National Alliance. What are your thoughts kind of on our current state of the American-based movement right now, over your time, really serving our people?
Well, you know, Matt, I have never in my lifetime experienced any epoch when America was more polarized and more divided than it is right now. At the same time, I can tell you that I've never seen the growth of the white nationalist movement be more accelerated than it is right now. I know that your organization, the GWP, is growing by leaps and bounds, and I see it myself. I actually have people locally that are contacting me so often that I have trouble getting the time to meet with them and vet them before I bring them into, you know, my inner circle, because there are so many people who are, I guess, use the common phrase, being red-pilled now, that are becoming aware of the corruption. And a lot of that is due to Donald Trump, his campaign, and his actual referencing of fake news. He may not call out the Jews per se, but without using the term Lügenpresse, he's calling them fake news. And people are now understanding that there is an intense level of corruption at the top they're willing to speak up against that they were never able to before. Charlottesville actually is very important in that, and the continuing fallout from Charlottesville. You know, the state review being released today, and the independent review, I guess, that came out a couple of days ago, indicates that this is not something that's going to go away anytime soon. White nationalists like you and I are not going to sit down and shut up anytime soon. We're going to continue to grow and to be active, and more people are joining our ranks every day as they become awakened and encouraged to just do what we do, just to say aloud what they've been thinking for a long time.
Well, no, exactly. And that's what it comes down to. I mean, our ideas are normal, natural, and healthy, that, you know, you have a people that's your extended family, and we need to be able to ensure that our children and all future generations are able to live free, sovereign, and healthy. I mean, these are not radical ideas. It's actual just radical common sense. And, you know, speaking of Charlottesville, you know, one of the things that is so important is the fact that, you know, we have comrades that are still in prison that didn't do anything. I mean, as we see from the reports that are coming out, this is what we saw on the ground. I mean, when I was there in Charlottesville, you know, and we asked the police, they were saying that we, you know, what we had to do. And I said, so you are telling us, you are ordering us to march into the counter protesters. And they said, yeah. And if you don't, you know, everyone's going to get locked up. I mean, this is the sort of thing that the police did. And now these reports have come out from the police chief saying, let them fight so we can declare it an unlawful assembly, on down, that all of the conflict that happened that day, it didn't have to happen. I mean, you know, there were, you know, some of your comrades from the Shieldwall Network that joined us in Shelbyville, along with the League of the South and other friends and allies. And, you know, the absolutely amazing group of guys, by the way. And, you know, as we were there, of course, in Shelbyville, there was no conflict, right? You know, we were able to say our piece. We were able to hold a very great demonstration. Same when we were in Pikeville. Same when we were all over the place. I mean, you know, we've been doing demonstrations for a very long time, and they are growing. More and more people are coming out every single time. But there's never conflict, or at least generally, when the police do their jobs to be able to ensure the First Amendment rights for both sides. But in Charlottesville, this was different. So all the conflict directly comes down from the fact that the police were not just incompetent, because that would be too generous. This was a conspiracy. They were engaged in an active conspiracy for there to be conflict. And we've got comrades like Dan Borden, Jacob Goodwin, and others, and until I guess yesterday, Chris Cantwell, Mr. Ramos, others that are in jail or have been in jail. I mean, Cantwell was locked behind bars for over 100 days. For being accused of using pepper spray to defend himself. I mean, this is a sort of lunacy. You know, guys like Dan Borden and Jacob Goodwin, who were defending themselves against violent thugs with weapons, who were actually actively already attacking people, they're still locked behind bars. So I want you to talk a little bit. You've been very involved, because the Goodwin family is from your neck of the woods. You have absolutely been there on the forefront fighting for Jacob and others. I want you to talk a little bit about that experience and about the current situation and just kind of how things are standing right now.
Absolutely, Matt. Well, first of all, I have to give kudos and much respect to you and TWP, because it's you guys, you know, who have the law firm in Ohio. Now, I won't mention the name of the law firm on the air. You can if you'd like. I don't know if that's, you know, what you would recommend or not, but the law firm in Ohio, which is actually coordinating the legal defense there on the ground in Virginia. And it's through that lawyer, whom I've spoken with in person a couple of times, that the legal defense is being coordinated. And I want to thank you and TWP for coordinating that and helping to finance that as well. It's very crucial to the legal defense of those guys there in Charlottesville. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, the police officers there on the ground were just following orders, which I guess didn't carry much weight in Nuremberg. But the mayor of Charlottesville actually wanted there to be a conflict so that he would have an excuse to declare the state of emergency and to shut the rally down, because he was upset about the federal injunction and about the permit being upheld for Lee Park. So he, I guess, was resentful and wanted to make a point. The point was that there would be conflict and he could use that as an excuse. So instead of even trying to keep the peace, and instead of even trying to preserve law and order, the law enforcement there in Charlottesville were used to, as you said, literally push. And, you know, even those of us who are not there have seen the videos, literally push one side into the other, and both sides being antagonized and both sides being armed. The conflict was inevitable. And then you see videos of the police just standing around watching, literally, while people are being attacked. So obviously people had to defend themselves, because they could not rely on law enforcement to do their job and to defend them against those who were armed and who were attacking, you know, elderly gentlemen, like the one who was attacked on the way into that parking garage that led to the melee there at that site. But obviously this was, as you say, a conspiracy. That's a perfect word. On the part of the Charlottesville Police Department to create a conflict so that they could then use that as an excuse to declare a state of emergency, shut down the rally, but it got out of hand and they were no longer able to control it, because obviously there was just too much going on in too many different areas. And I don't know exactly what is going to come of all the cases. I can tell you that we're hopeful that December the 14th, when the next hearing is scheduled for, there's going to be additional petitions for bond, requests for bond. And I am hopeful that since they did actually grant bond to Mr. Cantwell, that they may also grant bond to some of the other defendants. That'd be wonderful. We have people, you know, who are there who would be willing to provide residences if they could stay in, and if they had to wear ankle bracelets and put forth a bond, and that'd be fine. We could certainly do that. I don't know exactly why that is going to be. I know he's originally from New Hampshire, but He's from out of state. The others are as well. There should be no reason why, if he's granted bond, the others are not. But I'm hopeful that he will serve as a precedent and they will be granted bond as well. And that ultimately that could lead to other things. We wanted to have a change of venue for the trial because of the fact that the jury pool has been so tainted there. I'm sure they're not going to grant that. But we're hopeful that all of the gentlemen involved can come home free. And I'm not going to, like he wouldn't either, give up too much about the defense tactics or strategy. But we're hopeful that there'll be a positive outcome for all of the young men involved. Jacob, you know, is a friend of mine and a member of the Shulwell Network. And so I've been focusing mainly on his case because I know him personally. And I had a great sense of, I guess, personal responsibility that I felt towards him to do everything that I could. But we've been able to raise enough funds for him to, I think, have an adequate legal defense fund set up and also to help out with his commissary. And I encourage people to continue to write all of the defendants there to keep up their spirits and encourage them, send cards and letters, and we'll be doing that as well. But I know that you guys have been carrying a lot of water for them as well, and I really appreciate and respect everything TWP is doing for the defendants there in Charlottesville.
Well, and of course, you know, back to you for all that you've been doing. I mean, yeah, it was really amazing in Shelbyville to have the Goodwins come out and be able to speak to everyone. And I mean, how powerful that is to be able to see, you know, a mother and a father. I mean, you know, I'm a father of two sons, and to think about the situation of having your child for the crime of doing nothing except what any, you know, both legally and morally you're supposed to do. There's a duty and responsibility, you know, in Christian tradition and European folk tradition of defending those that can't defend themselves. And when people are being assaulted with weapons, you've got a duty and responsibility to legally and morally defend them. I mean, that it's very clear. I mean, this is such a clearly politicized case. It's pretty stupefying. Like, I'm genuinely surprised how bold the left is and everyone is. And you're mentioning the you know, the mayor of Charlottesville and everything was being pushed forward. We shouldn't be surprised that a Jew was petty, that a right. Jew feeling spurned didn't care about the human cost.
Exactly, and that's just their resentment. They're always out for revenge. You think about Shylock. It's been traditional of them to always want to try to get back. That's why they had the boycott of Germany, which led to a backlash against them. They are ultimately hyper-emotional about everything. But yeah, it was really a trap. And the fact that they wanted to turn it into a bloodbath, I think, speaks volumes about them and that they, like you say, cared nothing about the human cost on either side involved or about the First Amendment or freedom of speech. They were only interested in making their point and by shutting down the rally. And they wanted to set the precedent. You know, the ADL has this thing called the governor's contract, where they actually, mayor's contract, where they've gotten about 300 mayors from cities across the country to sign on to this agreement that they will try to limit white nationalist or alt-right gatherings, protests, and rallies. And I think that this was probably a response to Charlottesville because they want to try to limit our First Amendment to separate us from the media and to separate us from the audience, the normies that we're trying to reach with our message. But that's because they're scared. You know, Matt, they are really afraid because they see the growth of the white nationalists and the alt-right movement. They see that more and more people are willing to stand up and speak up every single day. And it's scary for them because literally they understand that they probably have pushed too far, but their kutzpa, you know, they can't help it. They just, there's too much hubris and arrogance. They cannot help themselves. It's in their DNA to keep pushing and pushing and pushing until eventually there's a backlash. And this time, with the world being so globally interconnected, we just may finish the job.
Well, exactly. I mean, they do this every single time. I mean, because they really, you know, are driven by a force other than self-interest. I mean, it's kind of a kind of an amazing thing. But I mean, one only has to turn to the scriptures, you know, and I know you as a Christian understand this very well. You know, when Christ said that, you know, they're of their father, the devil. I mean, we have to think about how demons act in many ways, and they're animalistic in many ways, and that seems to be the spirit driving the left wing movement. I mean, just look in the past 2 years pushing the transgender issue, and you know, I actually, and you were mentioning, you know, the lack of human cost that they don't care about for both sides. I mean, for these young white kids that they get riled up and get them to join these anti-fascist groups and stuff like that, I genuinely actually feel bad for them. Like, they're my opponents, but I genuinely feel bad that they're being used. They're being used by billionaires and people with all sorts of power. They're being used as meat shields for this Jewish agenda. And I mean, this is what they push. They don't care about them. They're willing to throw them away. That's why they get them into conflicts. They don't care if they go to prison. They don't care if they get hurt. They don't care about the Shabbos goys on their own side because they only care about their own people. And you know what really makes it different between them and us is we do this because we care about our people, because we want to do what is able to protect our families, protect our comrades, and to be able to build a better future. And I mean, really, it's just night and day between the motivations and then the resulting actions, because you know, we take care of our people. I mean, I saw this with all the organizations that were in Charlottesville. We ensured that every single man was accounted for, that everyone was taken care of. Guys who were injured were given the medical care they needed afterwards, making sure people were taken care of and continuing to support our POWs. I mean, this is the spirit that we come from, one of fraternity and camaraderie. And that is the exact opposite of how the left even treats their own people. I mean, one just has to look at the Second World War, you know, where they were grabbing Russian peasants off the street, you know, putting a gun in their hand, and then threatening to shoot their families and shoot them if they didn't go forward into German machine guns. I mean, they don't care about human life at all, and they actually want to destroy all that is good and wholesome. I mean, that's why they're against the family and the nation and healthy racial feelings, you know, normal sexuality. They want to destroy that. And they don't care how many people they have to kill or hurt or how many families they have to tear apart to do that, because they're being driven by, I really believe, this supernatural drive to try and destroy what is good and wholesome. I mean, this has been going on for 2,000 years and doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon.
Exactly. And you make a great point that we can extrapolate in a larger scale from the disregard for human life that was exhibited in Charlottesville on a larger scale, looping back to our original first topic about the move of the capital of Israel to Jerusalem. Well, they don't care if they start a nuclear war. They don't care, of course, because they started World War II and World War I, and through the history of our people, a lot of the wars have been the result of the machinations of Jews and Jewish bankers, which is a different subject for a different day. But they do not care, literally, if they started a global nuclear war, if it gave them the opportunity to tighten their control on those who survived and actually advance their own people's interest. So they would be willing to kill millions or tens of millions or even hundreds of millions of people as long as it were not their people who were dying.
Yeah, no, absolutely 100%. Well, Mr. Roper, we're coming to the end of the show. I mean, I love these good discussions because half an hour just literally, you know, flies by. But I want to give my listeners, can you talk a little bit about, as we close out, about the Shield Wall Network, about all the work that you're doing, and also your books, because Christmas is coming up. So everyone, we need to get some stocking stuffers of good white nationalist material. So let's tell our listeners, if they haven't heard of the work that you're doing, what you're up to, and how they can get in contact and see all of your materials.
All right. The Shield Wall Network is a white nationalist preppers organization, but we also do, in real life, boots on the ground political activism, not just here in Arkansas, but in adjacent areas and really wherever we're able to be active as well. And people can find out more by going to whitenationalists.com or by going to shieldwallnetwork.wordpress.com or just by emailing me at roper_billy@yahoo.com. And my books, I have 14 published fiction and nonfiction books. Most of them are focused on the coming Balkanization of America and the rise of white ethnostates, but also there's some science fiction. All of my books, both fiction and nonfiction, try to carry forward a positive racial message for our people, and they can find them on Amazon.com just by entering Billy Roper or by going to Books A Million or BarnesandNoble.com online, or once again, just emailing me and I will send them the links if they would email me at roper_billy@yahoo.com, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, of course. And, you know, to all my listeners, it really is important, you know, especially the books, I think is huge, because we need to have our own content, our own culture, whether that's guys like Patty Tarleton that created our own music, or of course, Jason Augustus, whether it's books, we need to be breaking ourselves away from the Jewish stranglehold over our culture. And we are creators. We have made some of the most beautiful art in all of human history, the most moving words. I mean, just going back to Shakespeare and thousands of years in the past that still move men's souls. I mean, this is the sort of thing that we can create and we need to, that politics is important, but we also need to be able to control our culture. And Mr. Roper, I just appreciate not just you being on today, the work that you're doing, but also for being a culture creator, because this is the sort of spirit that we need to have. And this is what we need to be doing. We need to be free of this system in every single regard. And that comes economically, and that comes socially, that comes culturally. This is what we need in the path forward to our own independent ethno state. So, Mr. Roper, thank you so much for being here. And to all my dear listeners, thank you so much. As always, I'm going to look forward to being back tomorrow to close out another week of The Daily Traditionalist. I hope everyone has a blessed and wonderful rest of your day. And as always, hail victory.
You've been listening to The Daily Traditionalist on Radio Aryan.